Horror Podcast, episode 10, Double Digits.
Woohoo!
Yeah! Alright, well, you know, everyone's probably out last night, so it's a super fun time to get started. This is our first here. Brad is here as always, with Brian Rose and Dan Ford, as normal. And, we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. We're going to talk about the game that everyone's been talking about, which is Life Strange Episode 5, which I haven't got to yet. So let's talk about Episode 2. So you're this girl, and... Oh, yeah, wrestling happens too. That game happens. So I guess we could talk about that first.
I thought we were going to talk about Tony Hawk 5. That's the game I've actually been playing all week.
All week? You mean like not for like an hour, and then you said, oh, this is complete utter garbage. Why does Lil Wayne have a name? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fun game, but at the same time, it's also, like, poorly made. It's weird.
Awful. You're, yeah. Like, the one person that likes that game.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I like it, but I kind of like it enough to play it for an hour.
Come on, man.
At a time.
Get a copy of Tony Hawk 3, and you'll be good to go.
Yeah.
So, WWE 2K16 came out this week. Yeah, you know, last week, whatever. It came out Tuesday. So, I've gotten the game. You guys haven't.
No.
So, it's going to be like, we'll do a little bit of Q&A. I'll kind of go through everything. Now, we're playing quite a bit of it. There's actually quite a lot to do. It's very different from last year's game. And there seems like a lot of people are actually playing it as well. A couple places where I talk about that stuff, people are actually, the topics are actually active, which is super fun. So I think what we'll probably do to kind of get things started, though, is we'll kind of start from the beginning of this little series that's been going on for 16 years. And we'll kind of go through, we'll go through the first ones in more detail, and then they kind of just become more annualized. But I think it's a good idea to know where they came from and kind of go from there. So, yeah, before we even kind of get into that, just kind of general, what is your guys' background with playing these games, these Ukes wrestling games?
Well, for me, I didn't have a PlayStation growing up, so I would play these games, like, intermittently. Like, I played a little bit of the first two games, and I think after that I remember playing the first one with the Brent Split, which I think is Here Comes the Pain. And then after that, I think it's just off and on with once they dropped the SmackDown thing and they went with like SmackDown versus Raw, I'd play that for a bit, like every year. Like, I've never like played one in depth, but I've played enough to like kind of have an idea of the series as in a whole.
To me, like, this was my Madden growing up. Like, I got every single game the week it came out, and I was very excited every time it was there. I would be watching, like, you'd go to, like, IGN.com to see what they always got the videos first, and they'd have, like, all the guys' entrances, and you'd see all the animations and see them, what their finishing moves had been animated to look like that year, and I was always very pumped for these every year. So, this would be my game series, more so than No Mercy, even though, in retrospect, when I got a chance to play that game, I was like, well, this is clearly the best, but the SmackDown games are the games I was looking forward to on a yearly basis.
I'm more on the on-demand side there when it comes to that. I think I had bought every game, at least in the first few years. Because being a PlayStation guy, those other games are pretty awful. And SmackDown 1 the game is problematic, but even when it came out, it's like, alright, well, it's a game where I can actually play it, and, you know, I can press buttons, and it was fast-paced, and it seemed to actually have a career mode to it, and the wrestlers were there. I mean, the entrances were just videos with them walking in place, okay. You know.
But I like those because at least those have full motion video, which is something that the Nintendo 64 like never did, so that was like cool for me to watch.
And you could definitely tell that was kind of them saying like, we can do this, so let's kind of show those videos. The first game is interesting just because it came out so, like, the time between the first and second game was very, very short. I don't think I ever ended up buying the first game. Because the first game came out like March 2000, and then the sequel came out like November or late October that same year. So I remember renting SmackDown, but I never ended up buying it because SmackDown 2 came out so quickly.
Yeah, I never ended up playing it either, because when I went to the store, I remember the first time I went to the store to buy a wrestling game, I went there and it was like 1 and 2 were out at the same time. And it was like, well, why bother with 1? I'll just buy 2. And then walked home with 2, and that's what I went with.
I have heard that 2 is like a significantly better game than 1.
Everything I've been able to piece together about the first one, because I've just never bothered with it, is like, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Like, the first one just looks like it's kind of rough. I have a feeling this might have had something to do with when we've talked about it on a previous podcast, but when they left Acclaim, and Acclaim, like, rushed out a second game that was basically the same as the first one. And I think maybe THQ was trying to rush out a game of their own to beat it to the marketplace, and there may have been issues with it. I can't say for sure, but it has a... Everything I've read about the first SmackDown game is that there is a rush aspect to it.
I didn't know, though, that... when did they leave Acclaim? Like, in 99?
Yeah, because the Ukes game, the first one was like at the end of 99, and it was coming out like 2 months after the last Acclaim game. They were all within months of each other. And then the Ukes game, also published by THQ, was coming out, you know, just a few months after that.
Okay. I mean, for me, I was reading like the SmackDown
games. Oh man, they're good.
He likes No Mercy.
He's sick of this shit.
Yeah, he had the doorbell ring.
Too arcadey. I don't like this.
Yeah, he's had enough.
Yeah. You also heard the only thing that I remember about SmackDown games that I always kind of remember is that, especially in the first two or three games, that they wanted it, obviously they wanted it to be different, very, very fast paced. I mean, it was called Exciting Pro Wrestling in Japan for a reason, but one of the problems that people always have with those first few games is how fast your opponent would get up from everything. Like, you could do, like, a special when they stand up automatically, and yet I remember having to do, like, 3 or 4 or 5, like, special moves just to pin anybody in those games.
It would change, though, like, based on the year. It'd be like, some years, it would be like, you hit one move and the guy's dead forever. Yeah. And then they go, well, that was too much. And then the next year, you'd have to hit a guy with, like, 27 moves. To the point where, you know, once they added the ability to have 2 finishing maneuvers, you would give everybody, like, a second move that definitely wasn't their move, just to be the one that, like, takes a chunk out of the guy. Because if you're an obsessive for realism, like I am, like, Triple H having to hit 7 pedigrees, that's just not going to work. Because I'm striving for realism here. But yeah, that was one of those things that they would play around with year by year. And there's always, like, part of the... It depends on how you want to look at it, whether it's charm or whether it's irritating, is how slapdash a lot of these SmackDown games are. Where it just feels like they got it in just under the wire. And there's always stuff lurking in it from, like, 3 years ago. Where you're like, that? See, y'all couldn't have cleaned that up by now? It's like, nope. We barely got this thing made in time.
Like,
you're
lucky
that everyone's faces are in it.
I think for the first SmackDown game, I think Chris Jericho was, like, a really late addition, and you could sort of tell that. Is that true? I remember hearing about that. It was either that or one of the Nintendo 64 games.
I mean, I know he's got to be one of the few guys to appear in both a WCW game and a WWF game in the same year.
That's true.
Because he was in Mayhem, for sure. And that came out in 99. So, that had to be rough on the old programmers.
Yeah.
Especially in those early SmackDown games, it's like, you know, Jeff Jarrett suddenly leaves, and so, shit, we went to the trouble of like, doing all this work to make Jeff Jarrett. We're not throwing all that away. They just put him in the creative mode where he can just you could just put them together, like, in pieces. The first two SmackDown games, I can't remember if they kept, I think they killed this by the time the third one came out for the PS2 generation, but they would have these, like, sample guys where they'd have their torso, their legs, and their head, and you could, like, mix and match. You could put, like, Jeff Jarrett with Ken Shamrock's body or whatever.
That was especially in the first one. I believe you could make edits in the second one, but the first one, I believe, was just head and body. Or was it all of them? I can't remember. I thought you could edit the, in two, you could definitely edit it. In first, you got, like, head parts.
Yeah, I know by two that they had that as, like, an other thing, and then they had the regular creative wrestler. But they also had the sample body. And that was the easiest way to make a Jeff Jarrett, if you were really looking forward to playing with Jeff Jarrett. Or Ken Shamrock. If those were your guys, you could still play with them. Although they never had his finishing maneuver. They had that Chris Jericho thing. Not the real Jericho. And that was the other thing. Like, they'd be really lazy about certain moves that they put in the game where you feel like, why isn't Hulk Hogan's leg drop in this game? Exactly. Like, I know he's not in the company, but this is a signature WWF guy. You should probably do that. And it's like, no, you're just going to do, like, this weird standing leg drop thing that doesn't look right at all. Again, they're things to get. They had Mike Awesome's powerbomb, but not Hulk Hogan's leg drop, which I always found funny.
That's no weird. Hulk Hogan, man. He's a traitor. You don't need to be in there.
Well,
yeah, I mean, that first one was there, but I think, really, the first one is exactly what you kind of said, where it's just, it seemed like it was kind of just like, okay, we have a game to release, so it's there. But I find 2 is really the game that I probably spend more time out of than all but, like, one other of these games. Like, I played so much of that first one, especially the season mode that came with it, which was, like, 8 years long, and
anime
had a... Yeah.
Was it worth playing it for 8 years?
Yeah,
I remember these career, early career modes weren't that interesting.
Well, so basically, the career modes work this way. So essentially, one of the big things that the career mode is known for, and what it's kind of infamous for, is every match was simulated. So even matches that you weren't in, shows you weren't on, the matches would be simulated by bars that would deplete between the characters, and whoever had got their bar depleted last would win. And so they would do that for every single match. So you'd probably spend more time in the game watching those bars go away than you probably would actually having matches.
I remember that.
I loved it. It seemed like it was heavily influenced by Madden, though, because if you played Madden back then and you were a franchise junkie, yeah, a lot of the time you spent playing Madden football was like watching the other games simulate before you got to play yours. And sometimes simulating your own game as you built up. You were more worried about the off-season stuff, or you were more interested in, like, the team-building stuff. So I felt like that was what they're kind of taking from, except they didn't give you nearly as... Like, they didn't give you all that ability to, like, manage rosters and all that crap. So it kind of came off a little slapdash again, but it was still... I loved it. Because it felt like a deep... No other wrestling game had gone to that kind of trouble. At least here.
Yeah, and it was interesting because it even tried. I mean, keep in mind this is 2000. You know, games there wasn't like this was one of the ones that had like cutscenes and everything in it. So you would have like the storylines would all repeat a lot, but you know you had like a load screen and it'd be like you know The Rock is here in the arena, and then
then more loading.
Yeah, you'd see a lot of the fortunes there,
and you could tell that the PlayStation was getting rickety. Like this old car was starting to like stuff was starting to fall off.
Yeah, this is released towards the end of the lifespan of the PS1, 2000-2001.
The old girl had given us all she had, and there wasn't much left. So you're gonna get 20-minute loading screens, and you're gonna get okay. We're trying to make this cinematic, but it's just a guy getting out of a limo. But in wrestling in 2000. There was nothing, like, people complained about, like, 20-minute promos to open every show. In wrestling in 2000, this guy's getting out of limos. Like, every wrestling show had to have 20 people getting out of a limo.
Everybody had to arrive late for some reason.
Nobody was on time.
Even, like, Vince McMahon would show up, like, in the middle of the show.
Bret Hart was in charge. With his tardiness.
Yeah.
Wrestling in 2000, if you believe like the whole like kayfabe aspect of how it was presented, it was like these guys are really above it all. They are sick of this shit.
They're really tardy.
They show up whenever they get a chance.
Yeah.
You're lucky they showed up at all.
Yeah. I've been watching SmackDown in 2000. It's sort of like a bad idea, because I just keep thinking, you know, it used to make a lot of sense back then. Nowadays, it's like we're just putting on stuff for, you know, I don't know, to make money.
Because it makes no sense. There was something about having an experienced writer who kept a show Bible and continuity.
Yeah.
Something about that made the show better or something.
Yeah, that's weird. And it's only like one guy as opposed to like 20 guys writing for Vince McMahon.
Wait, you mean having a giant committee where people are terrified to say anything and they can blend into a big room is bad? Is that what you're saying?
I'm going to go there and say yeah.
I don't know if the world's ready for your radical ideas.
I know. So weird.
But yeah, I like SmackDown 2 a lot. There was a lot of, like, most 2. I think I can go in my brain, and I think I could list all the loading screens and all the things that happened in it, you know, because there were the same old times where you have one where you attack, you have one where it's like, I'm here, who is my opponent? And that happened all the fucking time. The Rock, or Stone Cold Steve Austin, was an unwalkable character, I think, for, like, the first time, because he was injured at the time. But yeah, you go through the matches, you go through each one. There wasn't a lot to it. You'd unlock different characters. I think, like, Cactus Jack, Mick Foley was there, Billy Gunn.
Yeah, and this is a thing that people don't know about now, because everything has to be advertised, because they're trying to make money, obviously. But you didn't necessarily know who was in the game back in this period. So when you unlocked somebody, you genuinely had no idea they were going to be in it. So when, like, you go 3 months down a storyline and then all of a sudden Shawn Michaels is prancing about and you're like, oh my god, it's playing him! You are genuinely shocked and happy. And that's a thing you do not get today, because they advertise it and they want you to buy it and they have DLC advertisements and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, now you can buy a thing that'll unlock everything for like a certain amount of money.
Yeah. Like basically now they all have those season passes where you pay like $15, $20. And then you get to unlock everything as they put it in.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm sure it's better for them, but it's less exciting for the user.
Yeah.
Just have, you know, Cactus Jack pop in. And it's like, oh my god, I'm Cactus Jack. Now I'm WrestleMania Mick Foley, and I'm going to not be able to jump very far.
Yeah.
One of the things that I always remember about it is that one of the things about it is you could wrestle unknown characters. Basically, there would be a cutscene where your wrestler or the guy you're supposed to be facing would go into a room and get beaten up, and then you have a match with essentially what was a created character with a bunch of new clothes and attire on. If you beat him, you'd get all that attire, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, and it definitely simulated the fact that, like, that's what, as a wrestling fan, you always look forward to back then, is the idea of somebody showing up who you didn't necessarily know coming from WCW or ECW, if you were watching them. And they couldn't do that. They couldn't put, like, Kevin Nash in the game. They could have some guy show up with a bunch of different creator wrestler parts and then do the Kevin Nash powerbomb. And you're like, oh, I just got Kevin Nash's stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool. And there's a lot of moves and stuff to it. Like, there's a lot of, like, you can make stables, and there's all, like, a bunch of different match types. Like, I think there's a couple in there that still aren't anywhere. Like, I think there's tag tables in there, like, actual tag tables. And there's a bunch of matches in there, like, casket matches in there that you don't get anymore. Just, it was a well-done game. Like, not to get too far ahead.
Well, I would say they had a ton of match types and they had a ton of stuff, but it was all, like, kind of shoddily done. Because, like, the casket match was, like, there's this big box, and you can pick it up and swing it around like it's a chair. And then you sit it down, and you try to, like, Irish whip the guy into it, and then if you kick him when he's laying in there, the match is over and a thing flames down.
And you know coffins are so easy to pick up.
It's like the coffins are made out of, like, I don't know, Bursa? I don't know, what's cheap wood? And then just one kick and a guy's out. which yeah. they're trying. They're giving it all they got to try to put stuff in the game, but they just can't do it.
Yeah.
And then some of this stuff would just hang around for years until somebody got around to, like, okay, we should reanimate that and make that better. Like, the Hell in a Cell being the number one thing, because for years they didn't have a real Hell in a Cell match. They had
a cage with a top on it, yeah.
With a top on it, and then these squares that if you Irish whip somebody perfectly into the middle of the square, it would pop open so you could go outside.
Yeah, they didn't fix that for years and years and years.
I think
it was ridiculous.
I think it was Here Comes the Pain was the first time they had an actual cell, like the actual Hell in a Cell match in it.
Yeah, you could very well be right. Yeah, that's basically SmackDown 2. I still think it's good. I actually went and played a bit of it a couple weeks ago. Just kind of bring back those memories. And you know what? It's still there. It has aged. One of the other things to remember, too, is I believe these are the first games, too, that had, like, backstage and stuff on PlayStation. So you had, like, backstage arenas, you know, things were fighting the backstage and everything.
Oh, that reminds me. There was nothing more fun than just Irish whipping somebody into eternity. As
yeah.
they just keep running, and then they run through the one set, then the next set loads, and then you Irish whip them into the next one. And you were just Irish whipping somebody forever and ever and ever.
You would go to, like, WWF New York. It was stupid.
Yeah.
You take the train to WWF New York. That's one of the... I don't know if it's a scam. I know it isn't Shut Your Mouth, but I think WWF New York was in there, too. Yeah,
I remember
dumb.
That, yeah.
Silly stuff. But if, then
it's
on...
Yeah, it's easily the best wrestling game ever released on the PlayStation.
Mm.
Easily, by miles.
Yeah, definitely.
If you were a PlayStation kid, you never got anything else even remotely close to SmackDown 2.
Yeah, and it was close to the end, which is why the next game was WWF SmackDown Just Bring It, one of the very last games to have WWF under its name. It may very well be the last. It's either the last or second last, I think.
WrestleMania 18. For the GameCube.
I believe Crash Hour, or Crush Hour, whatever that weird twisted metal thing was maybe the last one was WWF.
Crash Hour never had the WWF logo. That was when they were transitioning.
It was WrestleMania 18, I remember, because they had to change the logo, and I think I had, like, the one before they changed the logo.
Because Crush Hour never came up, because Jeff Hartson and Giant Bomb always talks about how when he got Crush Hour... the thing that it said in the press releases that they were given was WW Crush Hour. So this is before even they were announced that they were switching over. They had that on there because they'd have to send out new press releases. So, but yeah, on to this game. So SmackDown Just Bring It is basically a high-res version of SmackDown 2 with a lot less features. Not to get too ahead of ourselves, it's kind of like the 2K15 of its day.
Yes, it is exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. It was the most disappointing game experience, maybe, of my life.
I remember when I saw the screenshots, it looked really, really cool, but I don't think I've ever played it.
I remember renting this game and being so excited, because I would always rent things before I'd buy them, just to make sure, because I'm very responsible. But I rented this game, and it was just like, oh, this is so cool, they have full entrances now, and look, Chris Jericho puts his leg up and stomps it. Ah, that's great. And, oh, look at all this wonderful stuff. And then playing a career mode and it's over within, like, 40 minutes. Being like, what?
Now, in a way, I had fun with that mode. Just, like, so basically, just to kind of give an idea. So basically, instead of having a career mode, it had, like, a story mode. But unlike some of the story modes later, yeah. Yes, that's how they said. But unlike story modes that came up before, it was like 3 or 4 matches, and that was it. So you'd basically... it would always start the same way, where Vince McMahon or whoever, I think it was Vince, would come up and say,
Vince.
Yeah, he's like, I want to put you in a tag. And you could either say yes to the tag thing, you could say no. And then basically it would allow you to go into like the arena, and you'd be able to walk around and talk to people and kind of figure out what was going on. So you could go... and trigger certain things to do certain matches. You could walk in and get the European title or the WWF title by doing certain things and being in certain spots. Just before I get into more detail, what I do find funny is that talking about that beginning, I used to know a friend that refused to say no to Vince. about not being in a tag team. I kept like, well, just say no. And he's like, well, no, I've got to do that. I don't want to do that. I'm like, well, what happens when you don't? He's like, I don't know. I don't think to that day he ever told Vince no. And that's like most of the game, which is super funny to me.
Well, maybe he just wanted to pretend it was real life, because imagine saying no to Vince McMahon and today in 2015. He'd be like so fired so fast.
This was 2001. He was probably really happy. Like, you know, how you want, always got to ask your boss for nice things when you're in a good mood. I bet, yeah, in 2001 he was probably in a pretty good mood. Everything's going his way.
Early 2001, yeah. By the end, when the ratings fell, yeah.
He lost like $100 million. I'm sure he wasn't feeling too good.
Yeah.
Maybe. But yeah, I think like when it comes to replayability, it definitely worked out. But some of those story modes were kind of fun. But yeah, essentially the game was basically the same. The only thing of note in this game is that it's the first and only, still only, game that allowed 8 wrestlers at once, which was neat.
How did that work? Did it work well? Because like you say, it never happened again. So
this game, I refused to buy this game on principle. I just want to point that out. I refused to buy this because I felt like they'd taken all the fun out of the SmackDown 2. But I bought it when we first started talking about doing this podcast, and I finally played it. Uh-huh. And playing it through again, I was like, no, this wasn't as bad. The emotions of whatever. But I will say that the one big problem with it was, in other SmackDown games, whenever somebody would punch you, your indicator would change to them. This one doesn't. You have to hit the button every single time to change indicators. So now do that with 7 different people in the ring with you. It doesn't automatically trigger, and your dumbass looks at the referee as a separate person to indicate towards, which they also took out of some later games, and you couldn't focus on the referee because it's complicated and stupid.
Yeah, I like to have an idea of 8. It worked well for Rumble. I mean, the reason why it's not in new games is just because character models are so much more intricate that they had trouble like putting that and their AI on different sides. But this game was just an up-resed version of the last game with less features, so they could just kind of use the hardware to push it to do whatever it wants. So that's why it wasn't in any other games, from what I know.
And the other thing about this game is they reanimated a bunch of stuff. Like they put in, in the PlayStation games, the only moves where they had like a lot of video stuff was the People's Elbow and the Worm.
Yeah.
This game they also added like the Lion's Salt. I think they may have added a couple of other things where it's like that kind of big thing where you hit a button and then basically a bunch of stuff happens and you sort of watch it happen until it's over.
Yeah.
They put a lot of that stuff in, and that was pretty cool looking, but then you see it contrasted with these old-fashioned animated moves where it would make those moves look really crappy in comparison. So that became like a recurring pattern where you have newer moves that looked really cool because they'd just been animated, contrasted with carryovers that looked like garbage.
Mm.
That looked more like garbage with each successive year because they're being compared to more and more new animation.
Yeah. It was interesting. One of the modes that was, I think it was in the last game, but the one that I kind of played a lot was the Slobberknocker mode, which was basically you versus as many guys as you could beat. You come in the ring each time. They were super weak. So it was always super fun going in and playing Steve Austin and just stunnering a bunch of people, because he was stunnering them, and the KOs were in the game at this point.
I remember that was in No Mercy too, wasn't it?
They had survival mode, but it wasn't the same. So with survival mode, they actually had like wrestlers were strong, but this game they were weaker versions. So like one stunner basically could KO anyone.
Okay.
So you go in and you just start KOing fools and just giving people stunners, and it was a great way to waste some time.
And like we just mentioned a little bit ago, where sometimes they have like one finisher kills a guy versus you got to hit a guy with 17 finishers to beat him. This was one of the one finisher equals death games.
Hmm.
So even if you're playing in a regular game mode, not even just Slobberknocker, you put a finishing maneuver on them, they're dead unless it's submission, and they just randomly decide that submission's not going to win this time.
Yeah,
because submissions was just, you locked a submission on, it did the animation, and then you randomly either won or didn't win.
Yeah.
And then you would let it go. as soon as the animation was over. There was no fighting through it. There was no fighting to the rest. There was none of that.
If there's one thing I don't miss about those games, or I'll notice from like playing the newer games, is that there's so much just kind of left up to not really knowing. Like, it's not, I wouldn't necessarily say chance, but it's a lot of it was in systems that it never really showed you. So it's just like, hey, you might work, it may not, but we're not going to tell you. So overall, kind of a terrible game. There's one last thing we need to talk about, which is the commentary. It was the first game to have commentary, and boy, was it off. But in the greatest of ways.
What was so funny about it is that they were really trying to make this, like, it's a SmackDown game. So you don't get voice of the WWE, Jim Ross, and at this time it would have been Paul Heyman. You don't get those two. You get 2001 Michael Cole and newly announcer Taz.
Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of it, they was like, it's still like PlayStation 2 stuff. So the commentary was disjointed quite a bit. So we were like, you know, Jericho is here in this singles match.
Yeah. It's like there were all these gaps that would be filled in. So it's like fill in the blanks. So it's like, he's a real Rocket Buster.
I remember like Taz responding was cool, was shut up for like no reason a lot.
He's trying to get over his baby face. This is when he was transitioning into baby face in WWE.
Yeah. So yeah, the commentary was very disjointed. It was bad. It was very unspecific. But it was kind of the first with games of its time. So if you know, you expect what you expect.
It's almost one of those things where it's like, you don't have to put that in the game. We're not expecting it. It doesn't have to be there. If you can't get it to work right, it's fine. We're not going to be crying about it. But we're going to put it in anyway, see how it works.
Why do you think they went with SmackDown as opposed to Raw? Was it because of the they were on the net broadcast television or as opposed to cable?
I think the plan... When they first made the SmackDown games, it was because SmackDown was a new show and they wanted to highlight it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then SmackDown became the PlayStation games, and they were going to have like the WrestleMania games be on the Nintendo and the Raw games be on the Xbox.
Yeah.
And that was already the plan. They were just going to keep them separate. And, well, those other two series kind of bombed out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, SmackDown, it's true.
SmackDown was wildly successful, so that's why they ended up all sort of combining it eventually.
Did they eventually win SmackDown vs. Raw and then WWE in general?
Yeah. That's what really found. I always thought, like, if you remember, like, all the idea during the Alliance and stuff around this time was to have, like, Raw become Nitro and then SmackDown become its own show. And it always kind of, that always kind of resonated with me as an idea, especially, like, if you think, like, what show was Vince on when he did the plans, but SmackDown. I always kind of felt like Vince had a bit more of a connection to SmackDown than he did anything else. So part of me thinks that's a lot of the reason why they can kind of stick with that as well.
I can see that. Yeah.
I just think this was sort of like they had all these different ideas. They had all these different people making a video game, and then Yuke's ended up being the one who made the best.
That sounds pretty legit, too. So. And too bad those other games are damn near awful, and we'll certainly get to them, especially.
Yeah, that's our teaser. Raw games are hot garbage.
Oh, man.
Hot, festering garbage.
I played all those GameCube games, and I can't even tell you, like, how they played, because I've completely forgotten.
Except for the 19 story mode, which is the greatest thing in the entire world. But we'll get to that eventually. Let's just say murder is involved. super fun time.
So that'll make some of you weirdos happy.
Murder. Yeah. next game in the series is Shut Your Mouth, which is it's probably still the one I have the warmest memories of that I played a lot. Like, 2 was this, and then it was Shut Your Mouth. And Shut Your Mouth was the game that me and my buddies just played all the time. Think of it, it's like it was an improved version. They had everything seemed like better from last time. So there was an actual career mode. It lasted 2 years. First year was based on the brand extension, what kind of happened on that, and then the next year was kind of original stuff. All the roster models, the roster was updated, the models were all there. It played with a lot better pace, like the getting back up really quick, that move was gone. It's just all in all, it felt better, and there's more modes, more things to do. It seemed like, it's like, for me, it's the PS2 wrestling game.
Yeah, I mean, this is the one I played the most on the PS2, and from what I remember, I really liked the story mode and like the brand extension stuff, because it was fun, like, being able to switch rosters around and being able to just play that mode. It was pretty fun. I mean, I don't think there was, like, much difference between either brand, but it was fun to play while it lasted, because that was when the brand...
Was there?
The what?
Wasn't it though? I thought there was a difference between the two. I can't remember, but
I remember seeing the same storylines in both brands. I mean, you could like switch the people around, and you could feud with different people on each brand. But I think the stories were kind of the same. That's what I remember.
This did give you the chance to live out like that alternate reality where they never went to having two champions, which they did by the end. Sometime after SummerSlam that year is when they had the two titles, wasn't it? Or was it a little bit later?
This was still the Undisputed title. So this
was
before then.
Because the game lets you like live out like what would WWE have been like if they hadn't done this stupid two title thing, and they had like the champion would go to each show every other month, which I always thought was a way cooler thing than what they actually did in real life. Because it was like, oh, the champion's here this month. This show has a little bit more juice to it. And the other one, you know, they're doing some other stuff for a month. I always thought it added, for the few months they did that, I thought it added to the shows, to the ones that had the champion doing storylines on there for that month. And this game sort of kept, like, that kind of idea. That's how it worked. The champion would alternate which show he was doing. So if you were on the SmackDown brand, you would kind of have, like, a month off. You weren't really doing much until the champion was on your show. So, this was like the last game with the classic SmackDown gameplay, because they blew it up next year, and changed everything, and did the Here Comes the Pain, which I thought was a little bit better when we got that game. But this was like the last game, and they had gotten it as refined as they could to get it without just blowing it all up. And it also had Hulk Hogan. You could play as Hulk Hogan. So.
And Shawn Michaels. I think Shawn Michaels. This was the first one of Shawn Michaels back in the game.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels with his NWO and jeans.
Yeah.
You couldn't play as Shawn. He was only an exhibition character. You couldn't play a story mode with him.
Yeah.
He was injured. That's not how it worked. Come on, man.
It was so irritating, because that was the year of Shawn Michaels' big comeback, and you couldn't play as him.
Yeah, it was really weird. I was really frustrated about it. And it's like, and you could buy on all. I remember, because one of the things, the way that it did unlock, and it's why I played through that story mode so many fucking times, is that every pay-per-view that you won at, or title that you'd win, you'd get to choose an unlockable item. So each one, there'd be like five unlockable items for each single pay-per-view that's out there. So eventually you'd have to go through it at least five times, or at least the criminal went 2 years, so you have to go through it at least a few times. And you have to win all the matches there, of course. And one of them was alternative attire for Shawn Michaels. I'm like, well, I need to get that. And it was an alternative, but like, I want, like, it's gonna be his old stuff. Like, that's what I want. It was like, he was like white t-shirt on. And
that was
so
pissed. That was the biggest disappointment in the history of video games.
Oh, that
maybe
is
hyperbolic.
That's so terrible.
Yeah, you're so right. And the other thing that was so irritating is that when you get to WrestleMania, they, like, Jim Ross would say, hey, you want to do a special entrance? And if you said yes, it was the WrestleMania 12 Shawn Michaels entrance. It's like, so you put that in the game, but I can't play as Shawn Michaels. Why? Why are you doing this to me? Why are you making my brain hurt? And you couldn't make a Shawn Michaels, create a wrestler, because this was the time where, for whatever reason, when you went to make a creator wrestler, you couldn't put anything over their underwear. You couldn't put the patterns. Like, this game was set up where you would put a guy in a pair of tights or a pair of briefs or whatever, and then you would put patterns over it so you could, like, make almost any... You could make almost any guy's tights. Like, you could make the perfect Masaba. But you couldn't make Shawn Michaels because you couldn't put a heart over his groin and over his buttocks. So you're just sitting there going, I can't even do this. You won't even let me do this right. You have foiled me at every turn, video game. You have ruined my life. I am 10 years old, and this is very big to me. Mm.
So
I was 14. That was bigger than 10. Oh, God. Now I'm really embarrassed.
Yeah. So I had tons of fun with that game. I just found, like, as I was there, one of the big things is you mentioned Hogan, and Hogan was always our, me and my buddies was always their big target. The reason for it is, for whatever reason, Hogan was, like, super overpowered in this game, to the point where, like, he would constantly have moves that would just and knock you out, and he get pinned out of bullshit. So basically what happened, he turned to the one guy where you'd have to try to fight and whatever. And one of the things that this game had was you were able to, like, go... There's backstage stuff like that was there. Same thing. You could take a train at WF New York, which is really stupid. But one of the things you could do is climb SmackDown Fist. And you could climb on the fist, and you could jump off it, and you could throw people off of it. So one of the things that took... Unless it took, like, weeks for us to do it or whatever properly to get Hogan to do it, you'd throw Hogan off, you'd power Hogan off the fist, and then you'd jump and do, like, a... I think it was Rob Van Dam, you'd do, like, a frog splash off that fist. And I just remember doing that, and it just be so cool. Like, just really silly, stupid stuff that you don't really see anymore, because, you know, games are a little bit different now.
Yeah, to be more realistic today as compared to, like, 2002.
Yeah.
Because I always wanted to jump off the fist. I didn't know you could do that. That sounds awesome.
I just remember you had to climb for so long that by the time you get off there, like, there's no way anybody was still laying down.
Yeah. They had to be knocked out a while.
These games all had, like, this weird dichotomy to them where they're, like, it's arcadey and it's quick-paced and it's easy to do moves and guys are getting back up. But then the moves were always really realistic-looking. So it's like they were kind of trying to, like, split the difference. It wasn't like when you play, like, a game like Legends of WrestleMania, where you hit a leg drop and then the guy does, like, the Shawn Michaels stuff where he gets back up and he runs around in a circle and then kicks his legs up and falls back down. It wasn't anything... Like, when we say arcadey about the SmackDown games, they weren't arcadey in that way. It was just really super fast-paced and nobody... These guys just didn't know how to sell. That's the big thing. The guys knew how to work in No Mercy. They didn't know how to work in the SmackDown games. They were killing the business, is what they were doing.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. But there's not like there's not too much to say with that. Like, but the next game that came out with it was Here Comes Pain, which is I know a lot of people like, and I'll explain my reasoning for why I didn't in some aspect. But the big thing with Here Comes Pain was that it totally changed the way the grappling system worked. So before that, you press a button up, down, right, left, and you do a grapple. And they would do moves. So you'd have about four grappling moves, and basically that was it. Now this game expanded on that, where you'd press a button and like a directional button and a grab move, and then you go into a grapple, and then you press another directional button. So essentially, your moveset was you know quadrupled with what you could do, and that just changed the way a lot of the game made be able to do a bit more, and made it a little bit pacing a little bit different with that game. Dan, what kind of experience do you have with this game?
This is the one I love the most out of the era of the pure SmackDown games.
You're definitely not the only one, yeah.
Yeah, I was definitely one of the guys who was really excited about them changing up the grappling because I thought it was kind of limited. And plus, you're getting into like Japanese wrestling, and you want to be able to do 1,000 moves, and you couldn't on the old grappling system. They had like the way the old one worked, like you'd have the quick buttons where if they're just standing there, you can do a grapple. You could kick them, and then they would like lean forward. If they were like stunned in any way, you'd have a new set of four grapples. And if you picked them up and you were holding them, that's another four set of grapples. So you've got 12 moves, and that's it. And so yeah, like you said, with Here Comes the Move, Here Comes the Pain, you had like 100 moves you could do to each guy.
Yeah,
which felt so much more exciting. But I will say, you've got a point that when I went back and played this for the show, it kind of is annoying that you can't just go do a move with somebody. You know, there's something to that. You've got to, like, grapple and then do something else and punch a guy and do all this before you can even hit, like, an arm drag. You kind of want there to be something you can do quickly, and you can't. The other thing, though, that made this game was this is the greatest roster they had ever compiled for a wrestling game, ever. You know, to this point, there had never been a game with this many main event caliber guys in it all at the same time. Because this is the game with Goldberg, with Scott Steiner, with, you know, with all the guys who were in WWE at the time, and then also Ric Flair, and Shawn Michaels is finally in a game in a PS2 era with the... You know, as Shawn Michaels, with all as a wrestler, and they also this was the year they introduced legends for the first time, unlockable legends.
Okay, were these the ones where they would come down to the ring like from WrestleMania 6?
They all were in the carts.
Yeah, the carts.
Yeah, and this was the first game. This was the first game ever with the Undertaker for that generation. It was like the old fashioned Undertaker. Because he was still a biker in the WWE universe of the time, but then Dead Man Undertaker was unlockable. And that was a big deal to people. That was a huge deal.
I think for me, was this the career mode where you could, like, roam around and talk to people backstage?
Yeah.
That happened in all of them, but I think this one was expanded, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you could go have meetings with the GM.
Yeah.
This is the one where the Bischoff and Stephanie are both GMs, and you could sit down and have a meeting and try to talk to them and trading you, and, you know, like, oh, I'm sick of SmackDown. I want to go to Raw. And then they'd be like, well, we'll think about it. And then you just show, you go forward a few weeks and, oh, man, I've been traded to Raw. Awesome. Shit, I'm being jobbed out to Triple H. This sucks.
My favorite memory, for whatever reason, is... One time I came across Maven, and I talked to him, and the only option was, like, nice eyebrows. And then I said that, and he got mad, and we had a match. That's the only thing I remember about the story mode for some reason.
Yeah, you could wander up to Undertaker and go, I want to be famous. And he'd go, oh, yeah, and then he'd just punch you. And
yeah. I think that happened, too.
The camera, like, because your perspective and all these things is first person. So when he punched you, you'd, like, fly backwards, and you see the room flying backwards, and you see your legs kick up in the air, like, oh, shit, that was a bad move. I shouldn't have done that. And this was the game where they reanimated a ton of stuff, and they put in the new submissions mode where it was like a button tapping thing to get somebody to tap out.
Yeah.
Instead of it just being random. It's like, well, you put a submission on, I guess you won or you didn't, and we're not going to tell you how. Now you got a button mashing mechanic. Which, at the time, was the greatest thing ever. And then we soon learned it was, like, if you put the difficulty up, unless you were freaky fast, you were screwed. You were never beating anybody ever. And for me,
I was. And even then, like, the button mash stuff was kind of rough. My biggest problem with this game, I liked it, I played it a lot, and it's great. Like, don't get me wrong, the system stuff's great. I found that it seemed really, really unpolished. Like, it seems like they spent a lot of time making that new graphics system, but the stuff that I come to for a WDV game wasn't there. The music was really bad. Like, there was no character portraits. It seemed like they just kind of, like, just used the models. There's no commentary in the game. We were getting more and more into the point where voiceovers were a thing. There wasn't any of that. We'll get to that, and we'll probably fucking get skies. But it just seemed like a lot of it was missing. And it kind of just felt like it wasn't kind of a whole game in a lot of sense.
But I always felt like not having voiceovers, it made it easier to put a creator guy in there. Because he didn't stand out. Like, it wasn't like, this guy sucks, he can't talk, and everybody else can talk. It's like, well, nobody can talk, so he fits right in. So it did have its benefits, but I can see where you, if you were into those things and not having them, that it would suck. I can see that.
Yeah. I just like that. I like the, you know, the pyro and ballyhoo of, you know, these games, and it didn't really have any. So that kind of bummed me out. still had a lot of fun with that game, and it, there's the career mode, yeah, it was definitely more expanded, but like you could do more and things like that, so I enjoyed it, and I think this is the first game, and I don't know if, how long it was in there, but it was the first game that had Braun Pannies matches, which if you want to remember how different wrestling is now from then, it's that's one of them.
If you want to be instantly embarrassed, sure.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God, somebody jerked off of that game, dude.
Yeah, well, with that, I think that's, let's not talk about that game.
That horror just watched over me, just all at once.
So,
just that awful, awful horror.
Yeah.
I just ruined it. You bitch, guys.
You ruined a good game. How does it make you feel? Terrible? I bet you it does. All right.
Now I know why Nietzsche died in a mental hospital.
All right, so we're gonna kind of put all these games. We'll talk about the next game. We'll kind of just we'll fast forward a little bit, but at this point, come 2004, basically the idea just SmackDown and Raw kind of became its own thing, and they kind of decided that it was a new era, and they couldn't think of any more Rock or Brock catchphrases to use. So I guess SmackDown, the next big thing, didn't really work. So SmackDown vs. Raw was released on November 2nd, 2004, and was kind of a seemed like almost a more polished version of the last game. But one of the big things that it had, well, two things, were online play and wrestler voiceovers. Now, if you want to know how bad wrestlers it can be at acting, well, here's the game for you. Someone explained it to me where they said it sounded like the wrestlers were recording their lines in some like empty warehouse, like with a gun to their head, and I think that's pretty apt. Voice acting was pretty awful by pretty much everyone, even people that are like were good. Like Kurt Angle was in it because he was GM at the time, and even like Kurt Angle's a good talker, but he's not a good talker on this game.
I can only imagine how many pills he was on, because this is when Kurt Angle was losing his goddamn mind in real life. So I can only imagine what he was like during those recording sessions.
I don't remember much about this game, but I do remember the voice acting sucked.
Yeah.
What? I don't even remember the voice. I guess stuff like that just washed over me. I can't even remember. But I do remember this is when they added the Type B submissions, wasn't it? Where instead of having a button mashing mechanic, you would try to trap a ball as it went by hitting the X. And
yeah.
If you trapped it in the right spot, then you won.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's how it is. Yeah.
It was a different one there. But yeah, I mean, like I remember it kind of like fighting SmackDown a little bit. And it was kind of I think this game was kind of last one because 2004 was the time when like come next year or the year after was kind of when. When wrestling kind of went to shit, for me.
People would say that these last two games we were talking about is when wrestling went to shit, though, to be honest.
So I
always find that funny when people think wrestling went to shit. Because I agree with you, but there's probably somebody out there that said that was their favorite year.
It was 2006 when Edge lost the title like a week later after he won it. I was still stoked when he won, and then he didn't see it. He just got it back. I'm like, all right, they're not going to change anything for a while. I'm done for a while. And then back to New Japan I went. Yeah, they're not too much to say, and this kind of goes on. This is also when they started doing their yearly releases when it comes to the name, rather than giving a different name. So next year was 2006, 2007, blah, 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 blah. This is also kind of where the games kind of roughly became, just feeling kind of the same thing. So the games were mostly the same, just was kind of slight updates, things like that, so.
And it's basically like, okay, the one new roster guy this year, we're in it. And then there was one of these SmackDown versus Raw games where it was like, now featuring ECW!
Yeah.
Had like
that was
all
2008.
All the broke-ass ECW guys in there, and then you could set stuff on fire before throwing people through stuff.
No zombie,
but Sandman was in it. At least Sabu. Trying to remember the other guys. I don't think Balls Mahoney was in it. I know Sandman and Sabu definitely were, though. Terry Funk had to have been in it. That had to be one of the last games. Well, no, Terry's been in a few since then, probably. I know Terry Funk's probably.
He was in 13. But yeah, I mean, one of the things, the only thing I kind of remember about the first SmackDown vs. Raw was that they had voice acting for all the characters. You could still go into each person and they would do all the voice lines for them. And I think the first, like, SmackDown vs. Raw storyline was, like, you, like, hitting on Trish Stratus or something. And it's, like, it's just the goofiest, like, you know, it's made, like, these nerds are gonna love this. You can hang, try to hit on Trish Stratus, and she's, like, throwing a towel or something. I was told Rene Dupree, because he had that silly fake accent he had. So it was always funny. Like, he is French, but he always hands it up for those games, which is always funny.
I'm trying to remember the exact point that the SmackDown series storylines got like that, where it was like, well, it started being like they started going to like every writer at the time, like, okay, what got turned down? We'll do that. What did someone say we couldn't do? We'll do that. And it just got sillier and sillier and sillier to the point where you're like, okay, you're making fun of me for watching wrestling now.
But there is one from, like, come these games kind of were SmackDown vs. Raw until 2011, and then it basically, they decided to realize that no one believed that SmackDown and Raw were fighting, so it was just WWE 12. And I think WWE 12 had, like, a focus on, like, 12 or 13, like, a focus on, like, tag teams. I think WWE 12 had a focus on, like, tag teams for some reason. But there's one storyline where Kevin Nash brings back WCW, and like Triple H has to come and like save the like them from remaking WCW again. So it's like Triple H versus Kevin Nash and like some cell. They like bring back Nitro. It's like those are the storylines where it's gotten super bonkers.
Yeah, I mean this is like going back a little bit, but the only storyline I remember was Teddy Long getting hit by a car. That's because they kept showing
that was SmackDown versus Raw.
That was like a gif over and over again, just him being hit by a car, and Tori Wilson's horrible acting. I remember that too. You think some of these guys are bad? Like Tori Wilson isn't going to win an Oscar. I have to admit, she's not.
You've finally given up that ghost.
Yeah.
I feel like these games were just sort of, these were the games that influenced a generation of storyline creators in the WWE 12, 13 games. Like, these were the games that these storylines had a formative impact on them.
Yeah. One of the things that should be noted, though, is 2010 was the first one to have the fabled story creator, where you could create your own storyline.
If you haven't, you need to go, if you're a member of the board, you need to go search for the Bone Machine's old summaries of those stories. Those are some classics.
That's like one of my favorite threads ever on that board, was Bone Machine's SmackDown vs. Raw threads.
Where Giant Bomb had a couple where they went through and did a bunch of story stuff where, like, it was like one was like ghost problems, which was like it's the most ridiculous stuff. And you could do more and more with it, and you could have like it's always super fun. I think I had one where Batista went in the past and like ran a bunch of people over and like created clones of himself, and like he had an army of clones because he needed to be way over or something. Like you could just do really really stupid stuff like that.
I feel like a disproportion of the people who made those storylines, it always would end up with, like, Jim Ross stuck in some kind of netherverse hell.
Yeah.
Screaming the life someone would let him out.
Or somebody would just fall from the sky and attack each other. Like, I remember seeing one where Mark Henry 98, like, squashed, like, Mark Henry 2000 whatever, like, just by falling off the ceiling or whatever. Like, he just squished him. Like, it's so weird.
I do feel like a disproportionate number of them involve Jim Ross being bodily harmed in some way.
It's funny. He gets hit by a car. That's the thing.
Like, Jim Ross would be run over. He'd be electrified. He'd be set on fire. Truly, Vince McMahon gets his audience more than we give him credit, because the WWE audience wants to see Jim Ross tortured and destroyed.
Yeah. And boy, did he deliver.
He delivered, all right.
But, I had really a lot of fun with those story modes. I think before it was kind of a little bit shorter, but then they kind of added a lot to them. I think that year as well, 2010 or 2011, I think, was the first one had WWE Universe mode, which basically it was kind of a way. So there was basically they separated it where before there was just a, like a career mode where you kind of go through the career and then that'd be it. It'd be 1 year, 2 year, whatever. This one they decided to be, they realized that it's like, hey, we want things to be more specific, so they had what's called the Road to WrestleMania, which was you choose a specific person and then they write a story for that person to kind of make sense. They weren't always good, but I think it was an interesting way to do it. So you'd have like five or six wrestlers and they'd each have stories to kind of go through.
I hated that.
Yeah.
Because it took away your ability to, like, A, make a creator wrestler and have him go through story mode. But it also, like, sometimes I want to be the Hurricane, and I want to go all the way to the top, because I'm going to make the Hurricane go to the top. And you couldn't now. You had to pick between, like, Edge, Undertaker, Triple H, John Cena, or, you know, maybe one other guy, Batista or something like that. And if you don't want to pick one of those guys, tough shit, Jerko. You're going to be one of those guys, or else no storyline for you.
Yeah.
Well, I think they had one created wrestler, one for a lot of them.
But then it was always like, you got to prove yourself, boyo. You messed with the wrong company now. And it's like, well, I'm playing as Masao. I'm a bigger legend than all of you.
That's not how it works. You're an Observer subscriber. You should know that that's probably how it would actually work in K-Man.
Yeah.
This is our town, brother.
Who's this frog-looking son of a bitch?
Listen, dude.
I'm the greatest wrestler ever, actually. Listen,
brother, you gotta pay your dues, dude.
Hulk Hogan is the gatekeeper of the WWE.
Even though he was not even at that point. I don't know, I find
brother, you gotta learn how to sell, brother.
Let me work it, brother. All right, another one I think they had too that they kind of got rid of real quick was general manager mode, where it was like a GM mode, like it was kind of like stylized in a lot of like a coach mode for like a Madden game, and I thought it was pretty interesting. It kind of was slow and there wasn't a lot to do for it. I think they expanded it the year after. I don't remember what year it started in, but you could expand that and
yeah, it was kind of like an EWR mode. But if EWR was really, really boring,
yeah,
I guess more boring than EWR is.
I like EWR, and this wasn't like EWR. I mean, it was fun to play for a while, but I wouldn't like have gone a full year. It just wasn't that interesting.
You never really knew if you were doing a good job or not. Like, they had nothing to sort of judge you. If you were like, oh, yeah, I'm getting the storylines, and it's like, okay, but like, how do you know if you're doing a good job or not? You don't. You're stuck in a world with no feedback, and that's no good.
Yeah, you need some kind of hook to get you interested in that mode if it's going to be like that. I'm just playing, just going through a year or whatever of WWE programming, that doesn't sound interesting, you know?
That sounds like hell.
There has to be a hook there. Like,
yeah, that's not like one of those things where they were like worried about, oh, we don't want to expose the business, we don't want to... But it's like, well, this is all a wrestling game. Like, they couldn't really figure out if they wanted to be, like, a wrestling simulation or if they wanted to be, okay, is wrestling real? Yes. So play that out, if wrestling was real. And this felt like a weird half-ass between the two ideas.
Yeah, it was really weird. There was another mode there. They got rid of that pretty quick for the reason that we talked about. It's really boring. One of the things they added, I think, in 2010 was the WWE Universe mode, which kind of got a little bit sidetracked. I talked about other things, but it was basically, it's like self-booking mode, where make up storylines and matches. And with the current game, which we'll talk about, a lot of the big problem with those is that nothing really happened, and like GM mode was kind of boring. Like, it just made matches, and it was like, okay. And they kind of build it. I think they build it wrong, where it's just like, infinite possibilities, and you can have fun forever.
No, there's not four possibilities. Once you've exhausted them, you have exhausted them. They didn't want to let you book angles, because I don't think they wanted you to know. I genuinely feel like there were people going, well, we don't want them to know that we come up with the angles. But it's like, you talk about all the stuff you do, making up stories. Like, why are you getting religious about it now?
Maybe they just didn't want it in the games. I mean, they could talk about breaking kayfabe and all the DVD releases, but I guess they feel that the games are different.
Like, who do you think's buying those other than 14-year-old me? It's kids wanting to know about all this other stuff. It's not like it's all old people. And even if it's old people don't understand the kayfabe more so than the teens do.
Yeah.
The old people are sitting around going, well, I didn't know they had guys coming up with Starz. I didn't know nothing about that. You just ruined wrestling.
Like in that Star Trek episode where they all think it's real. So that's, the game's pretty much the same. I remember buying, like, one every few years and being like, hey, is the game still the same? Is it still kind of boring? Yep, alright.
I haven't played one in, like, 2 years because I hate the reversal system. They added it in, like, 12 or 13, and I've hated it, like, every time.
So 12 added the reversal system where originally there was one for strikes and there was one for grapples, and it was a timing thing, where you press the button, you get timing, and you get it reversed. The problem with that, which was resolved this year, was basically, the thing is that if you were good at it, you'd reverse everything, and the AIs was bad, so when you had it on harder difficulties, the only thing that made the AI better was that it reversed everything, so it just kind of became reversal contests, and it kind of bummed,
If you were watching the games, it would be like you weren't watching like a simulation of wrestling. You were watching like this strange choreographed dance. It's just, I'll flip you around now, I'll elbow you in the face, but then we'll flip each other some more.
I guess that proves just how bad I am at these games, because even if I put it on very easy, I'd still get reversed all the time, and it's just not fun for me. Just having to go through, like, because if I get reversed a lot, then the AI would just beat me very quickly because I wouldn't get a chance to do it, to reverse back. Because it would always be, like, too fast or too slow. And that kind of got annoying for me, and I just kind of gave up. It's not fun.
Yeah. Those kind of went through, and they changed the name WWE, and there was 13 is one that a lot of people liked just because it seemed like it was, it had all the Attitude Era guys in it, but it was kind of essentially the same thing. And I think 13 started the thing where it would give you, like, it was their, like, showcase mode where basically you'd recapture certain things from the past. So you'd have a list of things to do to try to make it like the wrestling event there. So, you know, if someone threw something in the ropes and whatever, it would kind of happen there. So I think I still like it. They've kind of been doing it every year now, so people kind of got bored of it, but I think there's enough features that it's not a big deal. We'll get into that a little bit once we kind of get there, but one of the things with 13, it was the last game made by THQ before they went under. And then 2K Sports.
The last one published.
Yeah, the last published by them. By THQ, and then 2K ended up getting the license. The game that came after 2K14 was partially developed by THQ, so it was kind of like half there and half done. But the thing with 2K14 is 2K14 is liked by a lot of like fans there. It seemed like it was basically the culmination of the systems that and the games that preceded it. So you had a lot of, you know, all the modes were in there. You had a bunch of wrestlers. It seemed to kind of play really well, and I had a lot of fun with 2K14.
Yeah. Once the PS3 started, PS3 era started, like, the ability to put custom music into these games was such a revelation.
That was really cool.
It opened up so much as far as, like, putting a creator wrestler in there, and you can also put his music. And ain't that fun? Isn't that something you never knew you needed and now realize how did you ever live without?
Yeah, I remember I downloaded it. I think 2K14 or 13 was the first one where it had a lot more online gambling stuff. Like, there was a good ranking system, stuff like that. And the people who make cause, like, their creator wrestlers are crazy. And there was a point where you could go in and, like, download, like, a bunch. Like, I had the entire WCW roster. I downloaded all their themes. So I just remember having that. And that's really cool.
Yeah, that's a thing we haven't really touched on enough here. The SmackDown game's creator wrestler was so incredibly detailed compared to every other creator wrestler, as far as, like, the models. Obviously, No Mercy was super detailed as far as like the moves and what moves everybody could do, but nobody ever came close to giving you what you could do in the SmackDown games as far as like customizing how they look, and there'd be these long formulas that you could, you know, before they had downloaded somebody else's creation, you would print them out, or if you had a laptop, you would sit there with the laptop open, and you would just go, okay, face 0, negative 35,
yeah,
42, sure. And you just sit there, like, copying these formulas. It would be really time-consuming, but there were guys who'd gone to such detail to make these things right that you'd be like, yeah, that's a pretty good finished product. And I would say that I always thought the SmackDown creative wrestler was almost overwhelming, and I think that that's carried over into the current game, where it's almost like there's so much choice, and there's so many ways to customize the guys, and it's almost like, I can't handle it, but there's obviously guys out there who can, and then you can download their stuff. So the ability to start downloading people's creations really kicked the whole thing into another level.
Yeah. 2K14 is definitely the best game on the PS3 for wrestling games. Like, I know they've been still releasing the new games, but not to get too far ahead of ourselves, I wouldn't bother with them. I would just grab a copy of 13 or 2K14. I would say 2K14 and just play that. Next game. So basically, because 2K14 is basically half them, so 2K15 became like the first game that 2K had kind of full control over. Dan, why don't you just give us a summary of 2K14 or 2K15? Sorry.
Okay, so the issue with this game was it was the first game on a new console, so there was a bunch of different games that did this, where, like, the Assassin's Creed thing had a version of the game. If you had a PS4, and then if you had a PS3 Xbox 360 era, then you got, like, this other shabby game. That's kind of how this one worked, except the new game on the new consoles was demonstrably shittier than the previous generation game.
There was a lot of missing features, right? It reminded me a lot of NHL.
Yeah. And it reminded, obviously, we already talked about it, it reminded us all of, like, Just Bring It, where it's like, we're not sure how much this console can handle. They've changed enough stuff that we can't just port stuff without even, we've got to change enough stuff here to make this work. And one of the things that people are still complaining about, because it's still true for the newest game, is that you can't, custom music is gone. And it's probably never coming back unless 2K figures out a way to make it work, because the new consoles do not allow you to save audio files directly to your hard drive.
No.
And because of that, you can't put things on your hard drive for the game to pick up, which means you're now back to shut your mouth era, you know, or here comes the pain era, where you just have what they gave you. And if you've gotten used to all that freedom of being able to make a Tatanka create a wrestler and then give him Tatanka's music, that's now been taken away.
That's pretty disappointing, because I remember that being a big feature, like when that option first came out, and I was just kind of gone. But I think that's because of music rights, probably, and
This might get into just a general rant about the next generation consoles, but it's like they've gone out of their way to make them less user friendly than the previous.
For reasons
I don't understand at all. Like, why should I have to be connected to the internet at all times just to play a game?
Money.
I don't have great internet here. Why should I have to always be on the internet to play a single-player game mode? That's
because it's the future, Dan.
That's dumb.
You live in the future.
The future is worse. The future's not supposed to be shittier. We've made it shittier.
It's piracy. That's the why they went with that online DRM.
Pirates consoles.
Well,
like, I remember trying to do pirated downloaded games for the PlayStation 2. I had to have like a gimmick to open up the tray while the game was still working, and it almost never worked. And it was like, this is 10 times the work of just buying the game, and it's ruining my PlayStation.
Hey, it's a lot better than what the concept was, because Xbox One originally was supposed to be online requirement. You had to be online to use the Xbox One, and you couldn't share games with other people. That got so much backlash that they had to drop both of those things.
But that feels like where video games is now, where it's like they think they can just like put us over a barrel about everything, and then eventually people go, okay, no, I'm tired of you. I'm tired of you exploiting me. You will not exploit me in this way.
I have 70 megabits of internet, bro. I don't give a shit, man. I like the internet. I like when things are connected.
It's part of why,
if you don't want to live in it, then you just gotta do it.
Part of why I play video games a lot is because, well, I can't do anything else right now. My internet's down, or I don't want to do anything else. I'm gonna play some video games. Nope, can't. Internet's not strong enough. I don't even like playing games against people online. I don't care for such things.
I'm not good enough for playing people online.
I hate shooting games. I don't like playing them to begin with, but I definitely don't like them where some jerk who's memorized a map just sits in a tower somewhere and just shoots me as soon as I cross an area where I'm just exploring and nope, now I'm dead.
Yeah.
What fun is this? This is not... No! Bad.
My favorite game I've played online like the last few years, like Splatoon, and that was because because that was like the first game in that's ever come out, like a shooting game for the Wii U. It was like a new IP. So it's like just being able to play against people that are like at the same level as you, that's pretty fun. Like playing against somebody where, like you said, that they've practiced a map, that they've been playing this for like months, and then you come in like all new and then you get shot instantly. It's like, that's not fun at all.
No one enjoys that!
No. It's fun being able to play at the same level without having to worry about that.
You know, and I'm sitting here and I haven't bought a PS4. I'm sticking with my PS3 for a while because it's like I'm waiting for there to be enough games for me to actually want to play. When I look at like Elder Scrolls Online, like I love Skyrim. Skyrim's one of my favorite games. But it's like I'm worried that if I go get Elder Scrolls Online, there's just going to be some jackrabbit who's going to run up behind me and vampire me when I'm not looking. And I don't want that. I don't want that. I want to be able to explore around and do my own thing. I don't want other people interrupting my gaming experience. If I wanted to hang around other people, I'd go hang around other people.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the new systems. They're fun. I get the internet thing. That sucks. But I like them. I think they're all right. So those are kind of the games that preceded it. 2K15, yeah. Kind of a bummer. A lot of features missing. The game server had, like, 25 call slots. Like, it just, a lot of it wasn't there. It was missing a lot, and, you know, I felt they made a couple changes, like, the pacing was a bit different, like, things were a little bit slower paced, which I really enjoyed, but, like, everything around it was just utter trash.
I remember it was very buggy.
It's just, well, they're all buggy.
Yeah.
It's just modern video gaming in a nutshell.
That's it. Just video games in 2015 have to be buggy. And it required day one patches. Did this one require a day one patch?
I don't know. When I downloaded it, it didn't, but okay. I'm sure it was somewhere in there.
Like, I was estimating how much Halo 5 was, and I thought, well, okay, I'm going to guess, and I'm going to be generous, it's going to be a 7-gig patch. And then when it happened, it was like 9. Like, wow. That's video games in 2015. Everything requires like a 10 gig patch.
Yeah, nothing is actually made the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's just, you've got to sit there for hours as they correct basic mistakes that they allowed people to pay for the ability to beta test for.
Yeah, and my internet is so slow, it would take like half a day just to download that patch. That's crazy.
Yeah, and okay, I got more to preach on. People who buy consoles buy them because they're not either interested enough or savvy enough or just in general willing to spend the time to devote to being PC gamers. I don't want to spend all the time it takes to upgrade a PC constantly so that it's able to play PC games. I buy a console because I am a common man. I am a basic person. I just want a thing that's going to play some games for me to enjoy myself with.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't want to sit around looking at specs and upgrading hard drives and all that crap. And I don't necessarily need everything to be the best, latest graphics. If it was, I'd have a PC, and I'd have a gaming PC. But now it's like, we gotta make sure that all these things look absolutely perfect, and then the gameplay sucks, and it has to be patched for 20 hours, and I'm not, I don't, that's why I got a console in the first place, so I wouldn't have to deal with any of that. And now you're bringing that PC stuff into me, a common man, and
patches
I don't like
PC stuff.
It is, because it's like the game's not done, or the game's not perfect, so we'll patch it, and it'll be okay, and PC people are used to that. Because they're constantly modding and upgrading, and we got to make it where it'll run this thing better. That's fine. I'm not demonizing that. I'm just saying that's not me. And now you're making me have to deal.
Here's the thing: games are bigger and they're crazier and they cost more and development cycles are shorter. That's not true. Scratch that. Deduct that. But games are bigger and more crazy and things like that. And it's just, things are going to be bugs. Like, people expect everything to work crazy well, especially with things, like, especially on consoles, like, you're working within a spec limit. People, like, new consoles especially, no one wants to lose money on new consoles. They have to work with certain specs. Things aren't going to always work the greatest. Day one patches especially, because I get, like, setting broken games, like, if a game is broken or something unplayable, I'm not defending that, but... Like, day one patches is what happens, because you have, when a game goes gold, it's like 3 months before it gets shipped, it has to be patching. So you either do two things. Either they work on DLC, which is why day one DLC happens, or they work on the bug fixes and they plan it out that way to put that patch out there. And you know what? I'd rather them make that patch, fix the game, and do whatever than do it that way. And that's just kind of how it works.
The goal of video games in 2015, like, more than ever, is about making money. So there's fewer AAA titles out there, like, more than ever before.
Yeah, because it's way more expensive.
It's way more expensive, and it's just there's going to be so many bugs and so many problems with launch. Like, I remember last year the Assassin's Creed game was patched for that.
It was completely broken, and people's faces were monster things that didn't even show up right.
Yeah, but that's why they needed to put out that game so fast, was because I think it was the first, I don't think it was the first one, but I think it was the first one, like, exclusively on PS4, I don't remember exactly, but that game just had a bunch of problems,
and they were trying to make two games at the same time.
Yeah,
they made a different game for the old gen, and that one for the new gen.
That's the way to make money, though, is to go yearly. And, you know, with Assassin's Creed, it's kind of like the worst... Like, to me, the Assassin's Creed series is, like, the worst offender of video games and trying to monetize, like, everything. Like, I know the newest one has, like, microtransactions, it has Season Pass, it has all these things that just kind of annoy me. But I get why they do it, though. It's because they have to make money. And that's how people... That's the way people spend their money, is through microtransactions and season passes and day one DLC and all this stuff.
I would argue this is costing them money, because I can't be the only one. I can't be the only one who just refuses to buy new games until months after they're out.
I rent. I rent games, or, you know, Nintendo isn't into that as much as the other two are, so I kind of, like, go with Nintendo a lot. So, it's either that or I rent.
Yeah, I don't buy. I cannot remember the last time I bought a game the year it came out. I've rented games within, like, a few weeks of them coming out, but I've never bought a game. I haven't bought a game the year it came out. Since the NCAA football series ended, and that was the only game I was buying. Like, that was the one series where, okay, I'll go get that. Otherwise, it's just, no, I'm not going to be your beta tester. I'm not paying you to be a beta tester. You get this shit figured out, and then I'll buy it, and then I'll do the big download, and then I'm going to go, I'll play this game, and I'm going to try to buy it used, because I'm not paying the full price either for this thing.
If you're buying it used, they don't give a shit about you.
Yeah, well, I don't give a shit about them.
Well,
they can jump in a pile of turds for all I care.
Like,
I still buy,
like, Nintendo games when they come out, because there's still, like, a degree of trust there where I can, like, download the game or buy the game and play it, and it's not, like, a buggy mess.
Like, imagine that. Well, I trust that it's not going to be completely garbage and ruin my week. I trust that. Nobody else, though, because I'd be a fool to.
Well, I read the reviews before, because if the when reviews come out, they'll let you know.
He's got to do your research.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll let you know, unless they're IGN, and the worst it could be is a 7. What's the IGN? What's the famous IGN scale?
Like the one I keep hearing is like 7 out of 10. Too much water. Over at Legend of Zelda, Wind Waker HD. That's the one I keep hearing.
That was actually a good game.
Yeah,
that's one of the best of the games. Yeah. So new games. They're crazy and they're complicated and they require giant downloads that Dan can't do. That's fun. So let's get on
games
to...
Games have become significantly less fun for a user. I'm sure other people are making...
It's fine.
But the whole thing has become significantly worse for the consumer.
Nah. More complicated. It's fine.
I think it's undeniable that it's worse if you're a consumer than a user.
I'm denying it.
You might say that it's livable, that it's like, okay, I can deal with this, but you have to admit it's not as good for the consumer.
I remember buying cartridges that were broken and had giant bugs on it that I could never fix, and the thing was just to buy the new version of the game when it came out. So, you know what? Things have always been that. Video games are video games.
There's improvements, but there's also, like, detractions. Just in general.
What I'm basically saying, Brad, is that you're ruining the world because you're willing to accept what they do to you.
Yep.
And it's not like you should stand up and fight. I'm an organization I belong to, and I'd like to pass along some literature.
Okay. Do you have a pamphlet for me?
Yes.
I mean, you're already at the door here. I can't really say no.
So basically, this is a long way of saying 2K16 is unfettered garbage because you can't put custom music in it.
Dan gave it a 0 out of 10 in his review, or IGN score 7.7. But yeah, 2K16 was kind of like basically 2K16 was the game where 2K did not have any more excuses left. 2K14, they could say, hey, we can only build half of it. 2K15, their excuse was, hey, you know, we were moving to a new console. 2K16, they didn't have it. They are on the new console, and they had a lot of promises when they first came out. Big changes they were saying were going to be made. They limited the reversal system, so you had them all set up. We'll get that. They announced the biggest roster they've ever had, with over 120 wrestlers on it, which they IGN revealed, speaking of them, throughout the year. And they were saying, no, we made it better. We've done our job. And you know what? Most people were skeptical, and including myself, but I really think they did a good job this year.
You could play as General Adnan. What other game can you play as General Adnan?
You played General Adnan last year. Warrior mode. Man, I had a problem. Like, speaking of that General Adnan and the mission system, one of the big things that they changed, two things was, like I said, the reversal system was changed. Because one of the things we were talking before is that everything turned into a reversal fast. And that they changed this game to make it so you had a limited stock of reversals that would come back at certain intervals. Certain reversals would have more reversals than others, but you might have about 3 to 4. So once you use them, it would deplete, and if you didn't have any, tough luck, you'd have to kind of wait to get a reversal. So that added a little bit more strategy.
So is that for both the player and the CPU?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's one of the big things. Another thing was, and I mentioned General Adnan, because in 2K15, I think it was a championship match with like John Cena versus General Adnan for the championship, or whatever, because I thought it was funny. And he's one of his finishing moves is to do the sleeper hold. Now the problem, the way the submission system used to work is that it was just button mashing. So if you press the button more and more, the bar filled, you would tap out. The problem with that, and especially on higher difficulties and at certain points, if you were hurt enough,
you could tap like crazy. Like, I'm a very, very, very fast button masher. Like, and I, it was basically pointless. You do just win. Basically, matches would go about 5 or 6 minutes. You put in that sleeper hold or whatever, and you tap out. There was a time where General Adnan was champion for like months and months of in game time. So he kept making fools tap out to the stupid thing.
Wow.
The deadliest maneuver.
The deadliest maneuver, yeah. But they changed in this game where it's almost like the old Duke's UFC game where it's basically it's a circle and you basically, one is red, the attacker is red and the other one is blue, and you have to kind of go around and chase it. And that would change depending on what's going on. So if you were more hurt, the blue bar would be a lot bigger. If they had, you know, less stamina, it would be bigger as well, and it would go a lot slower. So the idea would be to kind of strategically wear them down and then do it that way.
Is it reasonably similar in difficulty as the UFC games?
Here's the thing. One of the first, like, not to get too ahead, but 2-Day Showcase is about all about Stone Cold Steve Austin. It follows his career. Pretty much the whole thing, but it's mainly about his WWF run. One of the first matches that it puts you against is the WrestleMania 13 match between Bret Hart, and that's a submission match.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you know about Bret Hart, but he's kind of known as a submission guy.
Yeah.
That's a bit controversial here.
He's the excellence of execution.
Exactly. So one of the things in that match, what you can do is you can try to make him submit. When I first did it, in the first couple days I played it, it was incredibly frustrating, and I felt like there was no point. He just kept going faster and faster, and I could never catch up to him, or anyone. I couldn't make anyone tap out. But looking online, and I found things, like I was speaking of, where, you know, if you lower down their stamina, and they had lower stamina, they couldn't run. Because there's a boost option you can press, and you can fall them around. So you could do it that way. In the game as well, there's work holds in the game where you can, you know, just like in real life, you can do rest holds where you can bring up your stamina or your reversal meter, whatever, will bring you down their stamina. So the idea is almost to bring down their stamina with, like, a work hold, and then maybe put them in a submission move, and that way they can't boost, they're not as fast, and then you can catch them up and do the submission.
So that brings me to a thing I was going to ask you, because according to my research, this game is going far out of its way to try to resemble what an actual wrestling match looks like, far more than I think any other wrestling game has ever attempted.
Yeah,
it's less a fighting game and more of a wrestling submission. What's the word I just used there? A wrestling simulation.
Yeah, like, basically one of the big things, the big change, and I kind of spoke about it in 2K15, but in 2K16, the pacing has changed a lot. It's a lot slower, everything's a lot more methodical, and it's a lot more about things like looking at stamina, looking at reversals, looking at things like that. There's a lot about spacing. So in the games before it, you know how, like, it'd be a special, you kind of, like, you're almost, like, attached to the guy you're attacking to do your special move. Or grapple or whatever it may be. In this game, it doesn't really work that way. So you could, like, say if you had, like, a stun or you had a kick, if you did, like, the grapple move or you did your special button, you went for it, there's still an animation to start it up before it would go through. So things like spacing, where the other guy is, and then looking at things like how much reversal they have, are things that you have to kind of think about when you're doing those moves. Which I think adds a lot of depth to the game. I think there's more to think about. That may not be what a lot of people like if they're looking for, like, the old games where it was more arcadey. But I think for a game that you want to play for a long amount of time, I think it makes it better. I think it makes it more fun because you feel like you have more control.
So what you're saying is you got to learn how to work, bro.
Yeah. Listen here, dude. I know you've been around a long time, but I fought
Andre the Giant. I body slammed the 900-pound great big stinky giant.
I think Hogan fought Sawa. I think that's all that much. I believe
he was a New Japan guy. I believe he was a New Japan guy.
Hulk Hogan? Yeah, he was a New Japan.
He wrestled Fujinami.
Yeah, I believe that Sawa match is on New Japan World. It's interesting to see Hogan wrestle in a strong style, which is kind of cool. But Hogan is not in this game.
No.
You mean, wait, what happened? Why? I saw all these screenshots. I saw Mr. America in this game. Tell me something didn't happen.
Mr. America is in this game. No, he's not. But, yeah, he's like...
Can we just talk about, I mean, I just sat there, I ranted on this show for a while about how the video games industry is terrible and awful. I do want to point out, how much must that suck to spend hours going over models of 80s Hulk Hogan and Hollywood Hulk Hogan and modern red and yellow tie-dye Hulk Hogan and Mr. America Hulk Hogan. You spent hours upon hours upon hours doing that and animating the exact way to do a Hulk up comeback. And then this fucking guy says the N-word and it's all done. And it's all thrown away. All of your hard work.
You kind of look good in those games, too. I mean, it happens. I guess, you know, they had Mega Benoit model eventually sometimes do the N reuse.
Well, it's just in this modern world where there's so much work goes into all this stuff. So, say a prayer for the 4G video game designer who had to work on the Hulk Hogan stuff, only to have it all thrown away because he's a dumbass.
His paycheck got ripped out by Herod.
Well, to be honest, there's a bunch of Hulk Hogan models last year they could just put in for 15 this year or 16 this year. So all they really need to do is remove them.
Pretty sure they told him no. But yeah, like I said about the game, it seems like it's all about like the pacing and the match kind of feels real. And they're also added, like the AI is a lot better. So because the AI can't just reverse all the time, it seems smarter. Like it seems to like try to win a little bit better. And I think in the game itself, it works better for back and forth. Like I've had back and forth matches before, like out of kind of luck in the older games. But this game, I feel like. Most of my matches are back and forth, and they're a little bit longer, and they have that extra kind of feel of them. So I think when everything, you know, in the gameplay is where kind of everything kind of culminates, and where if it's bad, everything else doesn't matter. And I think they do a good job. I don't know if it's for everyone, but for someone that kind of likes that kind of stuff, it definitely works. The other thing too is things like. But the AI is interesting in certain ways where, like, a heel will try to get disqualified or countered out if they start losing. I had a match with Heath Slater where I was beating him up and I was going to do the pin, and he went under the, got the kendo stick and got himself disqualified.
Huh.
Which made piss me off because I wanted to try to tap him out.
That's a new one. Well, I have a few questions from the board, so I'm going to read them off here. Grammarian says, who are your favorite wrestlers to use in the game?
I don't know, I haven't really used a lot of them yet. I kind of screw around with the awesome ones. I like Biker Taker's in it, so, and he has Roland, so Roland's kind of important.
Oh, wow. I didn't know they use that.
So do people have to pay? Like, do you make them pay?
Well, you know, always kick an asshole's ass. that's what I'm all about, brother. Back to Hulk Hogan.
this is a Hulk Hogan podcast. We support Hulk Hogan 100%.
Listen, brother, sometimes when you're in the mean streets of South Beach, shit just
South
happens.
Tampa.
South Tampa, shit just goes down. I don't know, I've really got anyone that I've used a lot. I play a lot of Billy Gunn because that's Billy Gunn, it's funny. He's got his one gimmick.
Does he do his
one Billy Gunn?
Does he do the flippy do cell for everything?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. But there's so many wrestlers. It's kind of nice that you just kind of have a lot of variety. Some of the wrestlers that have been in a lot of games I've been into, like I've played a little bit of Brian Pillman and stuff like that, just because it's kind of cool.
No one
is in the game.
I do like that they use the Hollywood Blondes music. That's awesome.
Yeah, you can play as Hollywood Blonde or Loose Cannon.
Okay.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Have you tried the creator wrestler move?
I did. A lot of things have been added in that game. Like, one of the problems with creator wrestler is that it was very, very, very bad last year. There wasn't a lot to it. This year they added a whole bunch of different stuff. The face capture and stuff has changed. There's a lot more creative parts. You can edit stuff. You can edit hair. You can actually dye hair. So if you choose hair, you can actually go in with a brush and discolor certain parts of the hair. things like that, which is kind of interesting. There's a lot more parts to it. There's a lot more stuff going on. You can do face and body morphing now that you couldn't do last year. Like, last year, you couldn't create a fat person because you couldn't create a fat person. They were all, everyone had to be like...
Very WWE.
Yeah, that's really about to say.
It's so Vince McMahon there.
Yeah, but all, you know, all the crate modes are back, so except for Crate Story mode. Which Crate Story is bonkers, and I think it seemed like they kind of always just kind of shut it in, so I think they were ready to kind of get rid of it. But you can create your own belts, you can create your own arenas, and there's a lot to kind of do that way. And wrestlers and titles. Like, it's, you can kind of create everything, which is interesting.
So, if I wanted to, say, create somebody, we'll say Fun Uncle from Main Street USA, could I actually create a reasonable facsimile of someone who would resemble a Fun Uncle?
Yeah, probably.
Can Fun Uncle come to life, is what I'm saying.
I would think so. You can't have his theme music, sorry. But you can do everything.
But he's 6'6", angry and mean. He's a living, breathing war machine.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you don't always get what you want. But everything else, like, creative-wise, is really good. The old modes are back. You know, 2K Showcase is what those games have been forever. Universe mode has been expanded a lot. There's more stuff going on. You can edit things a lot better. It just seems like it's there. And my career, same thing that happened last year, where it's just, it's expanded. There's a lot more to it. There's actually seems to be storyline stuff that goes on. And you just feel like you have a lot more control over it. So
I've been told, as far as that creative mode that you're talking about, that Enzo Amore is my trainer if I do the creative mode. Is that true?
Your first like, in the performance center, you'll go as Enzo Amore. So yeah, if you make like a Masawa Ka or a like I had a Hogan one last time, and yeah, so you and Albert will teach you how to do moves with the.
It seems like he's a not good a teacher, because he's always saying that he can't teach that. And as a teacher, as an educator, you can't ever tell a student that you can't actually learn something.
I don't think Enzo Amore is the teacher in that game. I think he's just like the guy. He's like the chump that wrestles.
Oh.
And like Andrew Bloom, he's the one that's telling you how to do shit. Except it's not like in 2K15 we had Bill Lamont, so... You know, there's less, you know, homophobic slurs in this game than there was last year. But in last year's game, Bill DeMart would like yell at you and do stuff like that, kind of like he did. In this game, they made sure that Albert got really nice. it's really obvious. It's like, you're doing a great job. Like, he's really like low key and stuff like that. Like, they could tell it's like Rick and Shore, no one knows.
So you're not quite right.
So this game is all about positive reinforcement.
Yeah, you're not going to write an anonymous letter to Yukes or whatever.
No, I think... doesn't have to get naked and shove his butt in my face.
I think that happens at the end of my career in 2K15. You send a letter to someone, and then you get to go to the main roster.
So, Barbarian also asked...
These games are really getting real true to life. I applaud some of the... Maybe I'm wrong about modern Digi games.
Maybe you are.
He also asks, which wrestlers look the best in the game, and which ones look the worst?
All the women look the worst, basically. it's like a million way tie. Natty looks decent, and Steph looks okay.
Well,
I think we've all seen the screenshot of busted Renee.
Oh, God, yeah.
Somebody did a rib on her.
I know the Renee. The picture that they showed is really low resolution.
That was the PS3 version.
It was not the PS3 version. That is the PS4 version.
Wow.
Is that teeth in games look weird when you try to make all like 20 or whatever? I don't know how many teeth people have.
75. Yeah. I have 75 teeth. I'm a shark.
Anyway, so when you try to make all those teeth, it looks odd on a character model. They have really doing this like weird Lex Mileage to like in fourth grade. But it's
definitely a phrase. I just got braces. Smile.
Yeah, that was what Renee tweeted when somebody showed her the picture.
It's not as bad as that picture. I mean, it's bad, but it's not as bad. But yes, I mean, like Triple H looks good. A lot of the wrestlers look pretty decent. Some of the wrestlers that you couldn't like get scanned don't look better. They one of the big things last year was that DDP one that they kept showing. They actually changed DDP to make him look alright. Yeah, most of them look pretty good.
For the ones I've seen, Randy Savage doesn't look that good.
Randy Savage looks awful.
Yeah.
Randy Savage is awful. Most of the main rosters. And they change like hair and stuff like that, so the hair is a bit more separated. I still have people call like ribbon hair, but I don't know, it seems fine. But yeah, the worst are pretty much all the women, except for Natty. And the best ones are most of the main current roster. Bad News Barrett and Neville and stuff like that look really good.
So the Jeremy asks, do the new Gen games have Jericho's tattoos? His arms on the PS3 are as bare as Ric Flair on an overseas flight.
No. So they don't, I don't know, what are, Jericho's tattoos? I don't know.
Oh, they're on his arms, on his wrists.
Yeah, they don't have them. I don't know why. Maybe for whatever reason, but.
Can you put tattoos on the wrist part of your body?
I don't. You can edit wrestlers. I just don't know if you do body edits for other wrestlers. You might be able to.
Okay.
I haven't really done that, but you can edit. You can edit existing wrestlers from the shoulders down. But I don't know if that includes body modifications. I don't think it would.
So I can't turn Triple H into a goth with piercings all over him.
No, you can't change faces at all. Mm. But you could make him in stupid stuff and change his entrance.
You could put the Wyatt family and combine them with the New Day. Have you seen that picture? The new Frey, or what was it? Yeah, the new Bray. The new Bray, yeah.
Yeah, I think WWE.com has a bunch of those videos up. If you want to see matchups, they're always stupid.
That's amazing.
It's good. I mean, all the modes are there, features and stuff are all back. There's a lot more match types this year. Before there's only a few match types. You still can edit matches, so I couldn't just turn off disqualifications on a singles match, or I couldn't turn off submissions. But overall, there's a lot more editing that way. All the titles and stuff you can still do and stuff like that.
So you mentioned submissions just then. Are you saying that a lot of matches end suddenly with submissions out of nowhere? I've heard that as a complaint. That I just got trapped in a submission and I don't know how to do the wheel thing that well, and I just got my ass wheeled.
Yeah, I find the thing I said before. Also, I found it to be more subtle with the moves. So instead of really quickly trying to follow some round, just do slow movements and just kind of stay on them, let them kind of go somewhere and then move it over. It takes time. It's not easy. It's not something you pick up. One of the things in this game I found, it's not good at explaining things, but also it's just a bit more complicated, which I don't really think is a bad thing. The more I play with the submission system, the more I like it. And I was the same way where I hated it at first. So I think it'll just take time to do it. Could matches end in submission? Yeah, but I don't know. I've gotten better with it by playing with it over the hours. Which, if you play it in a sports game like a Madden game, any time I start up Madden, it's just I don't know what I'm doing. But if I played long enough, I would get better at it and start doing I get my ass kicked in that game. But if that's the time that I did in WWE, like I would in Madden, then I'd probably be good at it.
So I've also heard that that a robot Dave Meltzer is in the game, and that you have to get your star ratings up, or else they punish you for having subpar, poorly starred matches.
Yeah, in my career mode, every match is rated by star ratings. That's what pretty much signifies more so than winning or losing. If your match is good, it's by variety and moves and stuff like that. You basically try to make things more entertaining.
Automatically get 4.5 stars for doing the Meltzer driver?
I don't know. I the Meltzer driver is, I believe, in the game, but...
Oh, man.
It's not going to be called the Meltzer driver.
I bet you would... Yeah, I let the internet make stuff, and I just use it. I'm not a creative type. I did make a women's tag belt, because, they needed one, but that was what it...
Did you edit in the Glamour Girls and the Jumping Bomb Angels?
No. I downloaded the Horsewomen.
Oh, okay.
I think Carmella's in there too.
Okay, I have one more question from Grammarian. He asks, what aspect of the game do you think should be the top priority for 2K to improve upon for future games?
I'm not really sure. I mean, there's a lot to it right now that's great. I think is, like, adding more variety and, like, match types, maybe doing it that way. Kind of working up the presentation a little bit better. Like, the graphics and stuff, like, I think they have a good foundation now for, like, the system, so I think they should really build around that. Maybe even bring back the story creator and update the graphics, make everything a little bit more pretty, like, maybe work on the models. So one of the big things people have is that there's most times two wrestlers in there, so they should look pretty good. And it's hard to make, especially, like, we're people that talk about this stuff all the time and follow up quite a bit. So when you're seeing those people all the time and you see a CGI version, it's not going to look right to you because it's CGI, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't really know. I haven't played the game enough to know what kind of improve it yet. But, you know, just I think if they keep adding stuff, just add more customized, like, make sure, like, I should be able to edit all that stuff. WWE Universe, I think, could be a little bit better. I think the more you can add to make it feel more alive, the better. But I mean, overall, I'm enjoying the game. I think it's the best of these games that they've made in years and years and years. So I think it's definitely a buy. And I don't think I'm the only one that thinks that at this point. I think, like, it's got, like, higher Metacritic score than Halo.
From what I've seen so far, yeah, it's gotten good reviews. I might give it a try. Just because of the reversal system, that's literally been like the crossing point for me when it comes to this game.
Did it take extra courage to buy this game, knowing that the commercials for it had been so garbage?
Did you see that commercial when that's a bonfire, man? That was great.
I don't know what's happening. Like, a bunch of guys standing around a bonfire, kind of looking like they're pissing into it. Like, I don't know what they're doing.
And then there's Stone Cold in the field with a shovel.
there's no sign of gameplay at all.
Well, that was just the first one. I think that was the announced trailer.
Yeah.
It's certainly a for the fans kind of game. Like, I couldn't recommend it for, like, someone who doesn't really like this kind of stuff. Like, if you don't like WWE, then you probably won't like the game.
This is not going for the same audience that, like, Legends of WrestleMania went for.
No, it's a for the fans thing, but it really does it well. It panders in the best possible way.
Yeah. That's what I've seen so far from it. Yeah, I mean, the Stone Cold mode, or whatever you call it, it looks really cool. It's really accurate, and actually shows in-game footage, which I really like. Not in-game, but I mean, like, real-life footage. Like, I remember seeing the King of the Ring 96 stuff. That was really cool.
Yeah, and, yeah, all the video packages in that are made by WWE's, like, insane video producers, so...
Nice.
It's a good package, so... Yeah, that's basically it. I recommend it. I'm not giving it a number score or anything. That's stupid. But I recommend it. Don't buy the Xbox 360 and PS3 versions, because it's just the same game with less features. Just get to PS4.
So what features are removed?
My career is not in it, and any of the new system stuff they've made changes. So it's basically, there's no, the reversal and the change to the reversal system and stuff like that. Are not in the game. So it's basically just like an updated roster and the 2K showcase from 2K14.
Just a piece of garbage, is what you're saying.
I don't see the point in it. I think they should just stop making it. And
yeah, that's what it sounds like at this point.
Save some time. But I'm sure they sell well, so that's why they obviously do it.
Yeah.
Because people aren't buying these exploitive consoles! That's why!
Yeah, Dan, it's your fault. The game sucks because of you.
we're not gonna take it.
Well, the last game last year, which was a bad game, it was like their best selling game. So,
oh god,
Andy, you're a fucking face. That's basically the game. And anything else you guys thinking out in your head for the game?
My only question was the reversal system. I can't stress enough how much I hate that system. So I'm glad they fixed it for this game.
Yeah, having the set reversals is just it changes so much. And I was kind of weary about it because the idea that having limited reversals just kind of sound like, oh, well, that means we're just going to get beat up and not be able to do anything. That sounds worse than anything I could think of. But no, it just adds more strategy. It's all about strategy. It just feels like a game where you can actually, like, there's some depth to it this year. It's not well explained, so you want to make sure you're going on the internet and check stuff like that, but outside of that, it once you know the systems, I think it looks great. I'll be interested to play with people and see what happens, because right now I only play by myself like a giant loser.
No, that's the way you're supposed to engage with video games. Anyway, based on the review I'm looking from, it seems like the mini games when you're doing transitions, like in collar and elbow tie-ups, the way God intended wrestling to always have collar and elbow tie-ups. It seems like there's a lot of mini games based off of that. For the transitions, is that intuitive? Does it feel like it flows, or does it feel like you're constantly stopping the game to do some bullshit?
I don't know if it feels like it's stopping the game. I don't know. A lot of people really, really hate it. I don't love it, but I think it works okay. The biggest problem that I have is basically what happens is you each have a circle with a little blue dot, and basically you got to move around the stick to go to a sweet spot that brings the blue dot bigger. Whoever gets there first wins that part of the hold. The only problem that I have with it, and it seems like it's fixed this year, but last year when Heisky happened, it felt like that the computer decided when you found the dot based on what it wanted it to do. So it didn't really felt like you were searching for it, and the fact that one won, it just felt like, okay, I'm going to keep spinning this around until it tells me that it's there. But it feels like, I don't know, it's fine. They seem to fix it there. You can turn it off if you want to. I like it on just because it kind of adds a bit, you know, a flow to the match when it starts, but I don't know. I can take or leave it. It's fine.
Okay. Interesting.
I feel like I want to rent it.
Yeah.
I was against, you know, playing this game for a while, but now I feel like I need to at least rent it and give it a try.
Yeah, and then you can, once you play it, you can kind of give us your thoughts on the next show. Yep. Yeah, that's basically the game, and you guys had any more questions, that's basically the show. WK816, I like it. It's good. I would suggest it. For $80 in...
It's $80 over there.
In Canada. So, if you have to think really hard, I think it was worth it. It'll be probably the last game I buy this year. Thanks, Persona 5, for being delayed.
Yeah, that's sad. I want to play Persona 5 this year.
Yeah, no, August. But as for that, 2K16, I suggest it. It's fun. It seems like it's worth it there. Like I said, just to reiterate, even people that hate the last year's game seem to be liking it there, give it a shot. I think it's probably the best of these games it's been for a while. A long time. It certainly feels more like something I'll be playing a lot more. So. Give it a go. And
that definitely sounds like a better situation than I was kind of expecting to be coming. But
I think everyone was expecting.
Yeah.
I was ready for it to be like, I liked the gameplay of last year's game, but I was just like, alright, well, whatever. If it has that gameplay and has a bigger roster, at least I'll get that. But
I was bracing for the worst because nobody got review codes until the day the game came out. It's usually a bad time.
They have a 9 month production cycle, and they were waiting for a patch to be released.
Yeah.
So that's why they didn't get the codes. That doesn't mean too much.
I mean, 2K has a tremendous reputation with their basketball game. It's maybe the greatest simulation of a sport ever made. Like, their series, I don't think any sporting game has ever come as close as they come to simulating a sport as they do with their basketball series. So it did kind of make sense that eventually they crack this nut. But it is interesting that they're going in a direction nobody's ever really been willing to go into, and that's like simulating the actual flow of the wrestling match.
Yeah.
Because, you know, wrestling games have traditionally always been basically fighting games with wrestling moves.
Yeah. I don't think it's it's not, I don't think it's like as good as Systems of Fire Pro in certain ways, but it had the same feelings when it comes to Fire Pro, where you're just, you'll learn stuff and you're just like, you when something doesn't work, you're just like, well, why? This is stupid. And then you kind of like, oh, wait, this is why, and you can, you have to kind of do this to do that. And that's the fun about these kind of games. And that's, I think it does it well, so. I recommend it, Island. But yeah, so that's 2K16. That's the entire SmackDown series. And that's our show. I'm going to probably continue to keep playing it, and we'll keep updates going on. I'll see what's going on in my universe mode, what's going on there.
I'll give updates when I play it.
I suggest you look out for Fun Uncle running in. That's what I suggest.
There,
if you watch your back during your entrance and make sure that a mighty Fun Uncle doesn't.
There's a funny thing. In my career, you could turn on a setting where your friend's cause will come into the game and attack and do stuff. So that actually can happen. That's our show. Episode 10 in the bank. We'll be back next week to talk about something. I don't know. It's a mystery.
We'll figure it out.
Who's in the limo?
We're Vince Russo-ing this bullshit. You turn in and you find out. We'll do
some stuff about you. Champion of the world. That's what's gonna happen. Cage on a cage. It's happening. It's happening. It's gonna happen.
I wanna tease. One day we're gonna talk about Cage in the Cage, and I'm gonna be the one guy who thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Tank Abbott on the Fire Pro podcast next week.
Oh yeah. That sounds awesome.
I'm reading Jerry Jarrett's book about the start of TNA, and it's so sad because it's full of, this is going to be a great project if I can just convince Jeff to not involve Russo.
Oh.
It's like, oh, Jerry. Yeah. Oh, you poor man.
This will end it with sadness. Yep. All right, that's our show.
That's what I do.
You jerk. Brad here with Dan Ford and Brian Rose wishing you a good week, day. Hour eating. Yeah, we wish you a great day after Halloween where you buy cheap candy.
Mm-hmm.
And goodbye.
Bye.